1 Corinthians chapter 15, starting with verse 35. Here's the question. But some will say, how are the dead raised? And with what body do they come? I believe that the first question, if taken at face value, was answered in verse 15. Yes, and we are found false witnesses of God because we have testified of God that He raised up the Christ. In verse 20, Paul says, but now Christ is risen from the dead and has become the first fruits of those who have fallen asleep. In other words, it was God who raised Jesus, and it is God who is going to raise us up when that time comes. But I don't believe that this is the question, or this is what is meant by the question. Have you ever heard the question in regards to the resurrection like this? If you were blown up in an explosion, what would you look like at the resurrection? Someone else may say, if you were torn apart by a whole bunch of sharks, would you have a ton of scars? I believe that the question is pertaining to how God puts the dead back together again after you become dust. And I believe that this is evident by the second question. With what body do they come? With what body do they come? Those were the questions. Now let us look at Paul's correction. Foolish one, what you sow is not made alive unless it dies. Last week in Sunday school, we talked about it again this week, I said, anyone who does not believe in God is a fool. And Nicole kind of looked at me with a shocked look on her face. As a pastor, is not supposed to use those type of words. And I said, well, I just want you to know that I'm paraphrasing Psalm 14. The fool has said in his heart, there is no God. Paul came straight out and called this person that asked the question a fool. And I don't believe that a question like this makes anyone a fool apart from their motives in asking the question. Let me explain. The first thing I think was happening was they were questioning the ability of God. It wasn't an inquisitive question. They were questioning the ability of God. I believe that they were thinking in the rational and not the supernatural. And this is common practice in our day. I remember one time leading a Bible study, and it was a prayer meeting / Bible study. And somehow we got on the topic, it may have been the study, but we got on the topic of the millennial reign of Christ, where Jesus reigns for 1,000 years. And the issue of the lion eating straw with the ox came up. And the person said, I think something else is meant by that because it's a proven fact that lions cannot eat straw, for their stomach is not equipped to handle the digesting of the straw. They will die. And what was taking place is this is thinking in the rational and not the supernatural. Have you ever heard the question, if everything had to have a beginning, then where did God come from? Heard that question? That's a very common question. If you haven't heard that question, you'll hear that question as soon as you start witnessing, because it comes up all the time. Vicki and I was watching an apologetic video series, and this guy who's the apologist, who defends the faith, said that he came across a guy, and the guy said, if everything has to have a beginning, then where did God come from? So the apologist said, well, I don't understand your question. He says, well, if everything had to have a beginning, then where did God come from? He said, no, I heard your question, I just don't understand your question. He said, let me explain. When we make reference to God, we are referring to someone who is much greater than ourselves. We are referring to someone who is all-knowing and all-powerful. Someone that can do and is much greater than we can possibly even imagine. Someone who is eternal. When we say God, how is it that we can possibly ask the question, where did God come from? Who made God? And that's where we are today. Why? Because we think rationally and not supernaturally. These types of questions are rational without the possibility of the supernatural. Look back at verse 34. Awake to righteousness and do not sin, for some do not have the knowledge of God. I speak this to your shame. How were the dead raised up and with what body are the questions that were asked by those who did not have an understanding of who God was? And that's why they asked the question. And that's why I believe they're questioning the ability of God. When they were thinking resurrection, they were picturing reconstruction. And that makes sense if you are only thinking rationally. We cannot take anything and create it from nothing. We can only take a table that is broken and take the parts to restore it. When they were thinking resurrection, they were thinking, how would they do it? I would have to take what was already there and bring it back to its original place. God doesn't need that. God's the one that created everything. He does not need to reconstruct as we would. Their question, Paul's correction, and now Paul's explanation. And the interesting thing is, Paul's explanation incorporates creation. Look at verses 38 and 39. And what you sow, you do not sow that the body shall be but mere grain, perhaps wheat or some other grain. But God gives it a body as he pleases, and to each seed its own body. Let me read to you Genesis 1, 11 through 13. Then God said, let the earth bring forth grass, the herb that yields seed, and the fruit tree that yields fruit according to its kind, whose seed is in itself on the earth, and it was so. And the earth brought forth grass and the herb that yields seed according to its kind, and the tree that yields fruit, those seed is in itself according to its kind. And God saw that it was good, so the evening and the morning were the third day. Most people couldn't hold a dozen seeds in their hand and tell you what those seeds will be, but God can. What Paul is saying is you don't plant an orange seed with hopes of an apple tree. If you want an apple tree, then you plant an apple seed. And it is God who has created all things, and he is the one that determines how those things will be. He said, after their kind. Not only does plant life have their own body and purpose, but so does the animal world. Look at verse 39. All flesh is not the same flesh, but there are one kind of flesh of men, another flesh of animals, another fish, and another of birds. Now we turn back to Genesis chapter 1, verses 24 through 28. Then God said, let the earth bring forth the living creatures according to its kind, cattle and creeping things and beasts of the earth, each according to its kind. And it was so, and God made the beast of the earth according to its kind, cattle according to its kind, and everything that creeps on the earth according to its kind. And God saw that it was good. Then God said, let us make man in our image, according to our likeness. Let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the air, and over the cattle, over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him, male and female, he created them. The same thing that was said about the plant world can also be said about man and animals. They are created by God for a specific purpose that reproduces after their own kind. Verses 40 through 41. There are also celestial bodies and terrestrial bodies. But the glory of the celestial is one, and the glory of the terrestrial is another. There is one glory of the sun, another glory of the moon, and another glory of the stars. For one star differs from another star in glory. Terrestrial refers to the earth, and celestial refers to the heavens. A friend of mine, Cody Barr, created our website. And in our website, he has places for pictures. So if we're having a study or if we're having on the homepage, it's a picture that just continuously changes pictures. I said, Cody, where do you get these pictures? You know, I'm not a graphic designer, and I'm pretty much computer illiterate. I'm learning. He gives me these two wonderful places that you can download pictures. I love to look through these pictures because I really enjoy looking at God's creation. They're full of galaxies and stars, and then you see the mountains and the rivers and the waterfalls, and I'm looking at God's creation. God created all of these things. Genesis 1, 14 through 19, then God said, let there be light in the firmament of the heavens to divide the day from the night, and let them be for signs and seasons, and for days and years, and let them be for lights in the firmament and the heavens to give light on the earth. And it was so. Then God made two great lights, the greater light to rule the day, and the lesser light to rule the night. He made the stars also. God set them in the firmament of the heavens to give light on the earth, and to rule over the day and over the night, and to divide the light from the darkness. And God saw that it was good, so the evening and the morning were the fifth day. I remember having Bible studies at the Kinghorn's house years ago. And this time of year, and in the fall time, It was those nice, crisp, clear days, nights. And every single night that I'd come out that was clear, I would just look up into the stars. I mean, it's really dark in that area. And I would look up and you'd just see the stars. And I would be amazed and I'd glorify God and say, wow, they're amazing. But they all have a purpose. And God created them all. And every star differs from another star. Every person differs from another person. Every thumbprint has a different design. We all have our purpose. We all have our different and distinct bodies. And they're meant for a purpose. There is no limit to God's power. That's what Paul is getting at here. He's saying, if you're questioning the ability of God, I want you to understand throughout all of creation, we go back to the very beginning where God gives an account how everything came to be. And everything that came to be because of Him. God created everything. And every animal, everything that exists is after its kind. They have different bodies and they have different purposes. And God is the one that determines how that all works out. We looked at the question, the correction, the explanation through creation, which leads us to the resurrection. Let's look at verses 42 through 44. So also is the resurrection of the dead. It all came down to this. So also is the resurrection of the dead. The body is sown in corruption. It is raised in incorruption. It is sown in dishonor. It is raised in glory. It is sown in weakness. It is raised in power. It is sown in a natural body. It is raised a spiritual body. There is a natural body and there is a spiritual body. Corruption means it has the ability to die. Incorruption means it will never die. Dishonor means imperfection. Glory means perfection. Weakness, limited in ability. Power, limitless. Natural body means material body. Spiritual body is the immaterial body. Just like the seed brings about something greater, so it is with mankind if we are saved. We touched on this a little bit last week or the week before, but I can't imagine what it will be like to have no physical limitations. You know, I somewhat remember what it was to be in shape about 20 years ago. It's amazing that I can even remember 20 years ago. But I can somewhat remember what it was to be in shape. You know, I've been working out with the boys on our porch, and we have kettlebells and been doing push-ups, and we have these gymnastic rings. We do dips on them. We have these battle ropes. They're heavy ropes you just swing. And I watch my boys, and I'm amazed at their strength and endurance. I look at them, and I say, wow, strength, youth, endurance. But all that's going to come to an end. You know, when I was in school, in college, going to school for the pastorate, I worked with a quadriplegic, and he couldn't feel anything from the shoulders down, basically. He could move his shoulders, and so he could swing his arms around. And he said, I can't wait to the day that I get my new body so that I can run again. You see, he was 19 years old when he was in this accident. And he was in the Air Force Academy. And he made the team, the track and field team, when he was his first year. He was quite the athlete. He said, I can't wait to be able to run again. He said, more importantly, there is something that I'm missing. I miss more than running. You see, he had a wife and he had a daughter, but when he hugged them, he couldn't feel it. He said, I can't wait for the day that I can hug and be hugged and feel it, and that first hug to be my Savior. I can't wait. We lose what it is that we have now, only to be greater when the glory comes. What is sown in imperfection will be raised in perfection. Look at verse 45. And so it is written, the first man, Adam, becomes a living being. The last Adam becomes a life-giving spirit. Is all who have ever lived credits Adam for their physical existence. So we as Christians credit Christ for our eternal existence. John 5:21. For as the Father raises the dead and gives life to them, even so the Son gives life to whom He wills. John 5:24. Most assuredly, I say to you, he who hears my word and believes in him who sent me has everlasting life and shall not come into judgment, but has passed from death into life. You know, Vic says it a lot of times joking around, but anything, something bad comes up or something that she finds pain or, and she goes, oh, that Adam and Eve, you know, and it's true. Our physical limitations are because of Adam and Eve. Adam was the head of the race, so he gets blamed for it, and rightfully so. But Christ is the one that brings our hope of the resurrection, that brings all these blessings. So we credit Adam for our physical existence. The reason we're even born is because we have a common ancestor, and it's not a monkey. It's Adam, Adam and Eve. So we exist physically because of them. We will exist eternally because of Christ. Look at verses 46 and 47. However, the spiritual is not first, but the natural, and afterward the spiritual. The first man was of the earth, made of dust. The second man is the Lord from heaven. There is an order in the resurrection, just as there is an order to any harvest of wheat. You plant the seed, and then comes the wheat. You plant the natural, and then comes the supernatural, or then comes the spiritual. Something has to die in order for it to have life. Look at verses 48 and 49. As was the man of the dust, so also are those who are made of dust. And as is the heavenly man, so also are those who are heavenly. And as we have borne the image of the man of dust, we shall also bear the image of the heavenly man. There are many absolutes in the world. Even though we are in a postmodern belief system in our world, there are a lot of truths that are found in the Word of God. But one thing is for certain. Everyone who is born is going to die. Everyone who is born is going to die. We are born because God created Adam, and because of Adam's sin, we all die just like Adam. If we live to be an old person, most likely we die painfully. I've said before that I think God is very merciful on us, because we, through the years, get all these aches and pains. Can you imagine God just unloading all of those aches and pains on us at one time? We'd be praying for death. But he gives it to us a little at a time as we can grow older with them. But those aches and pains are just evidence of the end result. And that is, we're going to die. As soon as we were born, we were on a downward slope. I don't care what our peak in life is. We were always sliding down towards death. You know, if you have a slide and you have those slides that go up and down, let's just say we have one bump. We're heading down. Between 30 and 35 is a little bit of a bump. And then we just head really fast downhill from there. And that's what life is. We were given the physical body, but it's going to die. But the good news is, we shall also bear the image of the heavenly man. When you were young, did you ever think that it would be cool to fly or to walk through walls? To have no limitations? I always wanted to fly without the assistance of anything that is made. Just thought it'd be cool. You ever see Superman and Green Lantern and all of those different things? I thought it'd be really cool. You ever see the show X-Men? In the last X-Men, this politician had this son, and he was going to go and have this shot so that he wasn't a mutant anymore. And he changed his mind. He was strapped down and everything, and he just breaks loose, and the wings come out, and he flies away. You know, I don't know if I'd want to walk around with big wings on my back all the time, but it'd be pretty cool to have a little slot in the back, slip out those wings, and start cruising, wouldn't it? I mean, that's just my demented way of thinking. But all that to say, I have thought about how cool it would be to fly, how cool it would be not to be limited. John 20, verse 19, then the same day at evening, being the first day of the week, when the doors were shut where the disciples were assembled, for fear of the Jews, Jesus came and stood in their midst and said to them, peace be with you. What do you notice there? The doors were shut. They were hiding. Jesus walked through the doors. Acts chapter 1, verses 9 through 11. Now when he had spoken these things, while they watched, he was taken up in a cloud and received him out of their sight. And while they looked steadfastly toward heaven as he went up, behold, two men stood by them in white apparel, who also said, Men of Galilee, why do you stand gazing up into heaven? This same Jesus who was taken up from you into the heavens will so come in like manner as you saw him go into heaven. We're going to be able to fly. Paul says we're going to have the same characteristics as the spiritual man. Yeah, we just like Adam, we're going to decay. We're going to die. We're going to have physical ailments. Things are going to happen. That's what comes with this life that we got from Adam. But we look to the life that comes from the spiritual man, the second Adam, Jesus Christ. There is no limitations. It's going to be amazing. We can fly. We can walk through walls. We'll eavesdrop on our neighbors and I'll never know. No, it's not true because that would be sin. But we're going to be able to do all these things. We will go from limited to limitless. Revelation 21, 1 through 4. I think I read this within the last 2 weeks, but worth reading again. Now I saw a new heaven and a new earth. For the first heaven and the first earth have passed away. Also there was no more sea. Then I, John, saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, prepared as a bride adorned for her husband. And I heard a loud voice from heaven saying, Behold, the tabernacle of God is with men, and he will dwell with them, and they shall be his people. God himself will be with them and be their God, and God will wipe away every tear from their eyes. There will be no more death, nor sorrow, nor crying. There shall be no more pain, for the former things have passed away. We will go from corruptible to incorruptible. The ability to die to never die again. From dishonor, imperfection, to glory, perfection. Let me put it this way. We are not what we will be. We are not what we will be. Let's pray.